Hello and welcome to the spring issue of the new quarterly Rotary magazine. I'm Dave King, managing editor of the magazine. Well, this is a first. For April, we're not only publishing the print magazine, but simultaneously, we have also produced a digital magazine with some shared content, but also some unique articles too. So, in this month's issue of Rotary Audio, we'll give you a flavour of some of the great content which has been published in the spring issue of the printed publication. We've got some varied content, including a feature on Tom Hamlett, who was winner of the BBC's MasterChef competition, and who 10 years ago won Rotary Young Chef. Now, I had a chance to chat to Tom about life since winning Rotary Young Chef, and for an insight behind the scenes on what it's like on MasterChef, and what Greg Wallace is really like. I spoke at a Rotary Club meeting recently where a female Rotarian told me how she enjoyed listening to my voice and her issue of Rotary Audio in the shower. I had no idea. Anyway, enjoy this latest instalment of Rotary Audio and don't forget, wash behind your ears. How on earth do you get over jet lag? Little more than 48 hours after arriving back from Chicago, my body clock is doing all sorts of handstands, adapting to the 6-hour UK time difference. The reason for the visit was a 2-day seminar at Rotary International Headquarters in Evanston, north of Chicago, which featured 25 editors of Rotary magazines from across the globe. We meet collectively every 2 years to look at publishing trends and to learn from each other. I presented a session on international copyright and joined editors from Taiwan, Denmark and Brazil to discuss digitalisation, in particular explaining what we have been doing in Great Britain and Ireland with our print magazines, the audio version and now the launch in February of the monthly Rotary Digital. It's fair to say there was universal praise from the editors for our innovative media platforms, mirrored by some very supportive comments from Rotarians in these aisles via email and social media. This month, for the first time, Rotarians will be receiving both Rotary Magazine through their mailbox and a link to Rotary Digital via email, each with their own exclusive content, as well as featuring some shared articles. It is a familiar refrain, but I would urge you to share this content, especially to those you know outside of the Rotary family. If you use social media, then share the link to Rotary Digital to others, so they can see the fresh face of Rotary in the 21st century. With the magazine, why not consider reading it and leaving it at a local library, community centre, coffee shop, doctor's or dentist's waiting room, or the reception of your workplace. For visitors or prospective members to your Rotary Club, give them a copy of the print magazine to take away with them. Sow those seeds of interest because you never know how they might grow. Speaking to other editors in Evanston, it's clear how membership is a key issue, and using magazines as a membership driver has become universal. After all, they are a great marketing tool, giving understanding to the work of Rotary. This month's print magazine features a veritable feast of articles, including a fascinating interview with MasterChef The Professionals winner Tom Hamlett, who fondly recalled the time 10 years ago when he won Rotary Young Chef in Dundee. The magazine also looks overseas to trouble spots in Ukraine, Afghanistan, Kashmir and Gaza, where Rotary's humanitarian work is having a massive impact. I hope you enjoy this month's double dose of Rotary Magazine and Rotary Digital. I'm always looking out for new writers to join the fold, as well as receiving your articles. So, if you're interested, please get in touch to editor@rotarygbi.org. That's editor@rotarygbi.org.
From Rotary Young Chef to MasterChef winner, story by Dave King. Tom Hamlett is feeling on top of the world. It's been 4 months since the likeable 24-year-old from Horsham in West Sussex lit up our television screens just before Christmas by winning the 16th edition of BBC TV's MasterChef The Professionals. Michelin-starred judge Marcus Waring described Tom's food as exquisite during the final, while fellow judges Monica Galletti and Greg Wallace also sang his praises. Food critic Grace Dent insisted one of Tom's desserts was the best she had ever tasted on MasterChef. "It has been non-stop since the final," explained Tom. "People have got so excited about MasterChef, and I've received loads of supportive messages." During the final of MasterChef, the website where I work actually crashed. There was so much interest. Work was at the Camellia restaurant at the South Lodge Hotel in Horsham, where his dad, Lewis, is the executive chef and mum, Hayley, works as a pastry chef. However, in April, Tom is taking up a three-month residency at Laneston House in Winchester, Hampshire, putting on show a menu to truly tantalise the taste buds. He'll be serving an £85 three-course menu featuring dishes inspired by his time on the programme. These include wood pigeon with crispy onions, celeriac remoulade, celeriac puree, pigeon and chocolate sauce, with a baked chocolate tart, blood orange and peppercorn pâte de fruits, caramelised popcorn, orange gel and telly cherry pepper ice cream. "I've got this residency organised, but after that I've not got anything lined up. I will see where life takes me," said Tom. "I haven't got a clear idea of what I want to do yet. I've got a few months to figure it out, as I don't want to rush into anything. I've always been very careful with what I've selected, so I want to carry on doing that." It was 10 years ago when Tom's culinary talents were first spotted when he won the Rotary Young Chef competition in 2014, his first cooking competition. The final took place at the Dundee and Angus College in Scotland when the then 14-year-old, sponsored by the Rotary Club of Horsham, collected a £250 cheque from Filippo Berio, a bag of Filippo Berio products, and a cookery course at Toscana Saporita's Italian Cookery School in Tuscany. Tom's winning menu at the Rotary Young Chef Final was seared scallops with mango, Jerusalem artichoke, brown butter and capers for a starter. That was followed by roasted breast of Gressingham duck, bacon quinoa, char-grilled Wye Valley asparagus, morels and broad beans. Dessert consisted of ginger and honey cake, rhubarb, yoghurt, pistachio and almond. "I was at school in Horsham at the time, and to win the Rotary competition was a bit of a shock," recalled Tom. "It was my first cooking competition. I got into it through my teacher, who suggested I have a go. Rotary Young Chef was a good experience. It was all about the practice you put in outside of the rounds. All competitions are like that. You've really got to graft. Make sure your timings are right so nothing throws you." From Rotary Young Chef, Tom trained at Westminster Kingsway College, and after graduating there, he was offered a commis position at The Pass in Horsham. He stayed there for a year before moving on to two Michelin-starred restaurants, the Latimer at Pennyhill Park in Surrey and Interlude in Horsham. It was no surprise with two professional cooks in the family that Tom would grow an appreciation of fine cuisine. "My love of cooking came from my parents. Whenever they made dinner at home, it was always nice. When you're surrounded by good cooks, you take to it much easier. I think the first thing my parents taught me to cook was a sausage." The decision to enter MasterChef was driven by the death last year of his grandfather, wanting to give his grandmother a distraction. In fact, the MasterChef trophy is housed in the family home next to the television and beside a photograph of Tom's late grandfather. There were no auditions to get onto the show, just two phone calls and a meeting. "The show's producers look at your CV, run through a few sample dishes, but I think they're looking more at personality at the start, for sure. Once you get to the studios in London, it was quite surreal. You see it on the telly, and then to actually be there was quite a daunting feeling, especially as you knew it was being recorded. But it was a great experience. Marcus Waring and Greg Wallace were really nice. They wanted you to do well. A lot of people assume that they want the chefs to slip up, but they don't. They're really supportive. When you're cooking and chatting to Greg and Marcus, you almost forget about the cameras. You're so focused on what you're doing. MasterChef really is as you see it. There are no people running about in the background helping you. You have a table where you put your washing up and people take it away, but other than that, it's all down to you." Filming took place over 3 weeks last summer, so Tom and his family had to keep the results a secret when the series was broadcast in the autumn. He celebrated watching the final at home with his parents, girlfriend and the family dog. "The dishes I was most proud of were the three I served in the final," he admitted. "I just thought they all went together on the day. That was the most amount of pressure I'd been under, but it was great to nail the dishes." Tom's winning menu started with a poached native lobster tail filled with lobster claw meat in a lobster and chili oil, topped with a lemon verbena gel, courgette balls and a creamy lobster and tomato sauce américaine. Greg told Tom, "This is a great light dish that really packs a flavour punch." The main was seared beef fillet on a bed of pan-fried oyster mushrooms, served with braised beef cheek wrapped in brick pastry and topped with a poached oyster. Marcus's verdict was, "Everything on this plate is cooked beautifully and your attention to detail is exquisite." Tom finished with an olive oil sponge filled with an olive oil jam, topped with a set lemon curd, creme fraiche cream, fennel tops and a fennel tuile. Monica's take on the dessert was, "It's just a delightful way to finish your meal. I love it, love it, love it." Tom admitted he had learnt much about himself and widened his cooking skills against 31 other chefs during the competition, which included working in the 2-Michelin-starred Alchemist in Copenhagen, Denmark. Head chef Rasmus Munk led the finalists into an immersive, breathtaking world where science, art and food collide. The chefs had just hours to master extraordinary creative dishes as part of an epic 50-course tasting menu and deliver to a whole new level. Asked whether he thought he could win MasterChef, Tom revealed, "At the start, there's 32 of you, so you don't really fancy your odds, but as we were going through the show, I was getting more and more confident. I never thought at any point this is mine. I stayed focused and didn't get sidetracked. But then after the final, once I'd plated those 3 dishes, I took a step back and thought, that's all I can do now. I don't think it could have gone any better." The plaudits were plenty for the young chef from West Sussex. Marcus Waring said, "From the minute that young chef stepped into this kitchen, he's been consistent and he's delivered at every single level. Tom's food today was technical, it was beautiful, and most importantly, it was delicious." Monica Galletti added, "I love how Tom is bringing his little modern twists, his personality, and his cheekiness into his cooking. His food has been cracking throughout, and he's still so young." Find out more. To read Tom's article from 2014, visit rotarygbi.org. Rotary feature, print exclusive. Afghanistan, the Rotary child that was lost. Despite the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan 3 years ago, Rotary's flame has continued to burn brightly as brave Rotarians seek to make life better for their country despite the restrictions. Story by Ramin Javid, founder and charter president, Rotary Club of Kabul City. On August the 15th, 2021, everything changed in Afghanistan. After 20 years of democratic government, the Taliban entered the capital, Kabul. For the Rotary Clubs of Kabul, Herat and Jalalabad, the impact was severe. At least half, if not most of their members, left the country or lost their jobs along with their sense of security. I was among them. 10 days after the fall of the government in Kabul, I was aboard a plane to the United States, leaving behind a decade of work in Afghanistan. This was the second time I'd had to leave Afghanistan on political grounds. Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, a rush of internally displaced refugees to major cities overwhelmed the 3 Rotary Club's ability to make the impact we were used to. As the banks closed, investors and foreigners left the country, and Afghanistan lost 90% of its GDP in a year while mass starvation set in. Out of desperation, people began selling their children, mostly girls, or their own kidneys to put food on the table. A country of 35 million people, of whom 70% are under the age of 30, Afghanistan was once again plunged into poverty. According to United Nations agencies, at least 70% of the population fall under the poverty line, while crime and desperation has taken a sharp rise. Girls over 12 years of age lost their rights to education as girls' schools closed. Banks opened, but only gave $200 per week if you were lucky enough to arrive before they opened in the morning. A new chapter of misery had begun. Since then, more than 2 years have passed with no improvements. People are desperate with little aid coming through. Rotary clubs, which had 15 to 30 members in Afghanistan before the Taliban takeover, now boast between 5 to 8 members, of which half live outside the country. Herat Rotary Club closed temporarily because of their fear of repercussions, because Rotary can be seen as an American agency. Summary executions became commonplace as the new authorities shoot first and ask questions later. What to do? The most practical option would be to close Rotary clubs to focus on ourselves and our families, but the spirit of Rotary, volunteerism and service above self lives on. As the founder and charter president of the Kabul City Rotary Club back in 2013, and in 2021 being elected as the next president, I gathered the remaining members for a meeting about the future of Rotary in Afghanistan. We met online, as members were living in at least 4 different countries. We talked about the next steps. With uncertain futures for each, members discussed the dangers of being active at this volatile time. Most called for our Facebook page with 7,000 followers to be taken down, fearing prosecution in uncertain times. So I agreed to shut it down for now. Better to be safe than sorry. The question now was, what to do next? The first thought was to restart our weekly meetings by meeting online. The next question was how to help the desperate situation in Afghanistan. First, we decided to promote employment by advertising Afghanistan's arts and handicraft. Afghanistan has beautiful carpets, precious and semi-precious stones, art, glass and other handicraft. Instead of asking for aid, which makes people dependent on outside help, we believed it was better to promote Afghan artisans by selling their goods abroad. The second thing we decided to do was something about girls' education. Not long after Kabul fell in August 2021, girls' schools were closed, and we knew we had to restore some dignity to people who lost their jobs. I had the opportunity to attend a Rotary Zone meeting in Prague in October 2021, where I spoke about Rotary in Afghanistan and what the crisis was like. Afghanistan has had a Rotary Club since the 1950s, but because of a lack of communication between Afghanistan Rotary Clubs and our district or zone through decades of war, Afghan clubs have remained isolated from the greater Rotary family. After my visit to Prague, I felt there needed to be more confidence building between our clubs and the Rotary family. The first step of bringing Rotary and Afghanistan together is happening. The next step is to increase membership and add an extra Rotary Club. This road is not without its enormous challenges. We're on our way to reactivating the Herat Club and chartering an e-club for Afghans abroad. Clubs in Afghanistan can be very active, it is just that now we are in a very difficult time. With a little support and encouragement, Afghanistan will be an active participant in the Rotary community. It goes without saying, world politics on a global scale affect even the smallest countries. But that is life, and all we can do is to find our way based on the principles of Rotary, service above self. Being kept away from the Rotary family for so long, Afghanistan is the child that was lost and is now finding its way back to the warm embrace of the family. Afghanistan is in a dire state and needs help immediately. We have the enthusiasm and energy to work hard to help people. Find out more. Ramin Javid, rjavid, that's rjavid, at gmail.com. Rotary Club of Kabul City, facebook.com/rcofkabulcity.
Building a future in Afghanistan. Rotary refuses to stand still in Afghanistan, where the three Rotary clubs acknowledge their need is greater than ever. They have joined forces to work on a project focused on income generation, education, and health. There are three Rotary clubs in Afghanistan: the Rotary Club of Jalalabad, the Rotary Club of Herat, and the Rotary Club of Kabul City. Following the Taliban takeover in 2021, Afghanistan lost most of its professionals and 90% of its GDP in the first year. The need for Rotary's work is beyond necessary. Because most of the aid agencies and foreign embassies have left, the economy is at a standstill. Poverty has increased multifold to the point that people are selling their children or their organs just to survive. The three Afghan Rotary presidents formed a committee with the Rotary Club of Kabul as the chair to combat the immediate needs of Afghanistan. There are three areas they are focused on: income generation, education, and health. Education. With the closing of schools, the education system has greatly suffered for millions of students, especially girls. In April 2022, the Taliban government enacted strict laws discouraging or restricting girls' education. Girls cannot go to school past their teen or sixth grade, so Rotary is working on four projects. Cyber Girls School. The entire school curriculum from grades 1 to 12 has been moved online, so students from across Afghanistan have access. The internet, which is relatively affordable, covers over 80% of Afghanistan and there is sufficient access to electricity. The course content enriches the government school curriculum, but also uses curricula such as Oxford or Cambridge. Rotary is negotiating with the government for permission for girls in grade 7 or above to learn at home, but they will need to go to schools twice a year to sit exams. If they pass, they receive a high school diploma at the end of their school year. It is the only compromise which can succeed in educating the girls in Afghanistan. With the enriched online curriculum, boys will also benefit as the old government curriculum is outdated. The scheme starts from grade 7 to 12, as most girls cannot go to school after grade 6. The cost of this powerful platform is $5 per year per student. There are no more added costs. This is the only way that girls' education will be accepted by the government. Girls' Enrichment Programs. This programme is designed to enhance education. With severe limitations on education, especially for girls, students have missed much of their education as many qualified teachers have left the country. Subjects of study would be STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and languages to substitute what they have missed. This project favours mostly girls, but boys can also be included to supplement their poor education. Vocational training. As unemployment is on the rise and food insecurity has passed 90%, people need to work independently since many larger businesses have closed down. Rotary is working with students for between 6 to 24 months to improve their literacy and numeracy. It teaches them a vocational skill and entrepreneurship so they can earn money and be independent. The training can be in health, beauty, crafts or engineering. Scholarships. To promote the best and brightest students, especially girls, Rotary is promoting the Rotary Scholarship Programme for students in private schools to encourage their education. It is not a Rotary International Scholarship, but an Afghan Rotary Club or District Scholarship. In addition to providing full tuition, $250 per year per student, the grants provide them with school supplies and STEM-related materials so they can excel. All students are selected after an exam and interviewed by Rotarians. Health. With the health system broken and the economy collapsed, many people cannot afford basic health care. Rotary is proposing four projects. Mobile clinics. These mobile clinics will visit different places every day to see patients who don't have access to doctors, primarily because of economic reasons. Health abroad. We're planning to organise a number of patients to go abroad for surgery, namely in India and Pakistan. Health fund. A selected number of patients who are in dire need of financial assistance towards minor surgeries that can be done in Afghanistan will be supported with the cost of their surgery. The cost will be no more than $1,000, with doctors encouraged to perform the operation free of cost or at a significantly reduced cost. Funds would cover medicine and recovery costs. Training doctors and nurses. On a regular basis, we plan to have healthcare professionals come to Kabul to teach short-term courses, which would raise the expertise of the Afghan healthcare professionals. Income generation. To give dignity to people by allowing them to earn money through their own skills, Rotary is proposing two projects: arts and crafts. Rotary clubs around the world can purchase Afghanistan products, arts and crafts such as paintings, calligraphy, glass, silk goods, jewellery, felt, carpets, etc., as well as dried fruit, saffron, etc., all high quality and low prices, and sell them. This way, Rotary clubs raise money for themselves and Afghan artists sell their items. Exhibitions. The hope is that Rotary clubs from Afghanistan would be given a free booth at various Rotary conventions to sell Afghan products. Money raised will be returned to Afghan artists. The work of the three clubs carries tremendous vision and hope as the Afghan Rotarians seek global support for their initiatives. To find out more, email Ramin Javid at rjavid@gmail.com. Making Rotary fashionable. What began as a fashion accessory for a funeral has evolved into a successful fundraiser for Rotary. The Narberth and Whitland Rotary scarf story started in 2016, when incoming President Mary Adams and some fellow Rotarians were asked to form a line of honour at the funeral of a fellow Rotarian in Pembrokeshire, West Wales. Mary, the current District Governor for Southern Wales, District 1150, explained, "All our fellow male Rotarians wore their Rotary ties, but there was nothing which made the women as instantly recognisable as Rotarians, so I thought, let's do something about it." Mary set a challenge to a group of textile and graphic students at Pembrokeshire College in Haverford West, working with the then principal, Sharon Lusher, and the head of facilities, Kath Brooks. The brief was to design and produce a scarf which was affordable to Rotarians. The winning design was from Mia Hewitson-Jones, which really impressed the judges, and with a bit of tinkering using the expertise of graphic student Sam Stables, a design was prepared for production. The biggest stumbling block was trying to find an affordable price. The most competitive UK price was £50. It was when one of the Narberth and Whitland Rotarians was visiting his daughter in Shanghai, China, that he found Jenny Wang in We Do Right Silk to produce the scarf. Approval was sought from Rotary International to license the new scarf with the help of Janine Birtwistle from the End Polio Now shop in Guernsey, and eventually, 3 years after the initial idea, Mary and the team were able to place the order. The scarves were delivered, we were all excited, and then customs gave us a hefty bill for good measure, explained Mary. Sharon Lusher, now Deputy Lieutenant of Dyfed, said, "It's a huge achievement for the college students to design a scarf for Rotarians in the UK. Both students have shown talent and design flair, and we're extremely proud of the two former students at the college. It really is lovely to see the final product. The scarves are proving popular and have been sold all over the world. Since the original green design, scarves have been produced using cerise and purple. We have come a long way since the original design of the scarf," added Mary. Recipients have included Jennifer Jones, past Rotary International President, Stephanie Urchick, the RI President-elect, and Heather McInley, wife of current RI President Gordon McInley. So far, 187 scarves have been sold, with £1,197 donated to End Polio Now. Priced at £25 plus postage and packing, the scarves are available online at www.nwrotary.co.uk, with all proceeds going to End Polio Now. To order your Rotary scarf, visit nwrotary.co.uk.
Charting the Road to Peace. Rotary editor Dave King was among delegates who attended the Presidential Peace Conference in London, listening to a high-powered lineup of speakers. With a delegation from Ukraine proudly brandishing their blue and yellow flags, a reminder about the spectre of war was never far from the consciousness of those attending the Presidential Peace Conference in London this February. Rotarians from 50 nations gathered at the International Maritime Organization's headquarters, just over the water from the Houses of Parliament, and next door to Lambeth Palace, home to the Archbishop of Canterbury. What those 650 delegates heard was an impressive series of speeches and presentations which tackled the subject of peace from all angles, and not the obvious approach of armed conflict. Maria Vittoria Gargiulo, a Rotarian from Salerno in Italy, spoke about hate speech, fake news and disinformation as threats to peace. "Let us be the changemakers and the advocates to peace," she urged, insisting education was the gateway to establishing positive peace. In fact, education was a word which cropped up frequently from the dozen speakers in the goal towards positive peace, an expression which might be described as a tautology. After all, can there be a negative peace? Positive peace, the definition goes, is underpinned by attitudes, institutions and structures which create and sustain peaceful societies. High levels of positive peace occur where attitudes make violence less tolerated, institutions are more responsive to society's needs, and structures underpin the non-violent resolution of grievances, delegates were told in the conference briefing pack. At the heart of this are the eight pillars of peace, a model constructed by the Institute for Economics and Peace, whose founder, Steve Killerly, an Australian IT entrepreneur, outlined the work of the IEP, its relationship with Rotary International, and those eight pillars. Well-functioning governments, free flow of information, sound business environments, acceptance of the rights of others, good relations between neighbours, low levels of corruption, equitable distribution of resources, high levels of human capital. Established in 2017, the IEP works in several areas, having trained 210 Rotary activators in 65 countries to implement positive peace projects. Steve Killerly explained that these simple local community projects are non-political, and because they are solution-based, they build on Rotary's values of inclusive and diverse cultures. Rotary provides a unique opportunity for grassroots work in communities around the world, he insisted. Together, we build capacity and empower Rotarians to build peace. Social cohesion has never been so important. One of the most powerful presentations was delivered by Debbie Hodge, the former Rotary Great Britain and Ireland president. She was working at the British Medical Association headquarters in London in 2005, just yards from where a bus blew up on a day when four suicide bombers struck London's transport network, killing 52 people. Debbie described tending the dying and injured amid the wreckage of the double-decker bus. A situation in which hope is destroyed and peace is a fantasy, she explained. True peace will only be realised when we are not separated from each other by fear or suspicion. A world which is free, equal, loving and considerate of each other. Curiously, Debbie drew reference to the coffee house culture as a platform for peace, which the Lord Mayor of London, Michael Mainelli, had spoken about earlier in his address. Coffee houses, the American-born British scientist and economist explained, were a London tradition stretching back to the 17th century when they played an important part in the development of the capital's businesses. Answering the question posed to all speakers, there will be no peace without, the honorary Rotarian revealed his chosen word was tolerance. It is a humble but profound word, he said. Mainelli said, tolerance is being willing to condemn oppression and the persecution of others. There will be no peace or hope without tolerance. Maybe we should revive the coffee house tradition to disagree more agreeably. Tolerance is a good fit to Rotary's road to peace. Coffee aficionado and Rotary International president Gordon McInally pointed out that Rotary already had 36,000 coffee houses where Rotarians come together. We have the opportunity to come together to discuss important matters of the world in an unthreatening manner. These events have the potential to be patsy, lip-service bore fests, but the lineup of speakers was impressive, the quality of their presentations was of the highest order, and the quality of speakers addressing different elements of peace was refreshing and off the scale. Sir Malcolm Rifkin, a politician who has served in two government cabinets under Margaret Thatcher and John Major, asserted with conflicts in Ukraine and Gaza and tensions in Taiwan that the world was currently living in pretty unique and unprecedented times. When I later asked the former Defence Secretary what role he sees Rotary in serving peace, he responded, Rotary is a part of civil society, and one of the great distinctions of being a democratic society and not an authoritarian dictatorship is that we positively welcome the involvement of millions of ordinary citizens, not just to their own country's destiny, but in making a contribution to the wider world. And Rotary is one of the best examples I can think of in that direction. Dr. Fatou Bensouda, a former chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court and the current High Commissioner of the Gambia to the UK, spoke about how there could be no peace without justice. Irina Georgieva-Bokova, a former Director General of UNESCO, explained how they have shared close ties with Rotary since its founding in 1945. Creating hope in the world resonates with me, she said. Rotarians can create the environment where positive peace can be built through sustainable activities in communities worldwide. Rotarians share the same philosophies of UNESCO. You have peace as the cornerstone of your mission, which are the same ideals as UNESCO. In reflecting the importance of education along the pathway to peace, she quoted Maria Montessori on how avoiding war was the work of politics, whereas peace was the work of education. And picking up on that point, Professor Fiona McCauley, director of the Rotary Peace Centre at the University of Bradford, and herself a former Rotary scholar, spoke about the importance of women in peacebuilding, adding, "Peace accords last at least 5 years longer if women are involved when societies are more peaceful." Besides the hard talking, there was also music, with 16-year-old Oscar Brown, a Rotor actor from St Ives in Cornwall, leading a conference sing-song with a piece he had written entitled Rotary Song for Peace, and Taichi Yamanishi led a rhythmic drumming for peace segment with Gordon McInally, RI director Eve Conway, and her predecessor Nikki Scott joining in with their percussion instruments. But it was left to the Rotary International president, Gordon McInally, to both open and close the day-long conference. In a wide-ranging speech, the Scot insisted how Rotary has a vital role in advancing the cause of peace, adding, I often say that Rotary needs to work towards peace as aggressively as do those who wish to wage war. McInally hoped the peace conference would be used as a launching pad for action. He added, it's vital that we do far more than just simply talk about peace. That isn't to demean the importance of talk. In fact, sometimes the very first step in creating peace is to be willing to talk to one another. The way we talk about peace and the way we model peace-positive behaviour is vital to the kinds of action which we're capable of taking and the impact we can ultimately deliver. McInally also addressed peace directly in a Rotary context and the behaviour of Rotarians in their clubs and communities. He quoted the great Scottish writer Robert Burns, who spoke of sense and worth all over the earth. He said, "This spirit is apparent in Rotary's vision statement of, together we see a world where people unite and take action to create lasting change across the globe, in our communities and in ourselves. When it comes to lofty aspirations like these, we must never lose track of that last call, that to bring about change in the greater world, we also need to foster change within. For Rotary to live up to our full potential, we must do better in the way we create peaceful relations within our communities, within our clubs, and within our personal relationships to promote greater understanding member to member." Where Eagles Dare, Bringing a Positive Peace to Kashmir. Jammu and Kashmir have been a flashpoint between India and Pakistan for over six decades, but Rotarians from across the world are trying to bring some peace and stability to the troubled region. Story by Dave King. The Himalayan region of Kashmir is one of the most visually stunning places on Earth, but also among the most volatile. Predominantly mountainous, with snow-covered peaks soaring into the clouds, Kashmir's resplendent geography features deep, narrow valleys and high, barren plateaus with thickly forested foothills. And yet, ever since the partition of the Indian subcontinent in 1947, this northwest region has been the focus of perpetual conflict and a flashpoint between India and Pakistan. The northern and western portions of Azad Kashmir and Gilgit-Baltistan are administered by Pakistan, while the southern and southeastern areas of Jammu and Kashmir are administered by India. The Indian and Pakistan-administered portions are divided by a line of control agreed in 1972, although neither country recognizes it as an international country. Adding further fuel to the fire in this disputed region, neighbouring China has controlled the northeastern part of Ladakh since 1962. The nuclear-armed neighbours of India and Pakistan have fought two wars over the Muslim-majority territory, which remains one of the most militarised zones in the world. Now Rotarians are attempting to build bridges in this sensitive area with the formation a couple of years ago of the Kashmir-Ladakh Steering Committee, featuring Rotary clubs from Great Britain and Ireland, the USA, Canada, Africa, and several Rotary districts in India, chaired by Sorman Ray from the Rotary Club of Calcutta. In May 2022, a group of 25 experienced Rotarians got together to draw up a community development needs assessment with the ambitious title Where Eagles Dare. On that team were David Johnson from the Rotary Club of London and Jill De Warren from the Rotary Club of Battersea Park, who is secretary of the steering committee alongside Chairman Sorman Ray from the Calcutta Club. One definition of peace is that it is meant for within a community, across various borders and between different countries, and most importantly within oneself, explained Sorman Ray, who attended the Presidential Peace Conference in London in February. But it needs various catalysts, and Rotary is one. When a community feels contented with their way of life and infrastructural facilities are available, the peace is not far. It's an ongoing process rather than a one-off achievement. 2 years ago, those 25 experienced Rotarians from across the globe met with key government officials in Kashmir and Ladakh to plan a vision, notably having talks with Manoj Sinha, the Lieutenant Governor of Jammu and Kashmir. Jill De Warren, who's foundation chair at the Rotary Club of Battersea Park in London, said that they identified a need for Rotary projects serving all seven areas of focus, with priorities in health, education, water and sanitation, plus the environment. She said, "We visited Srinagar and Ladakh and found opportunities to improve the living conditions of the communities, and children in particular, especially those living in remote mountain villages inaccessible to schools and medical care. One immediate requirement was the need to establish a solar-powered water pumping facility on the Indus River in Leh to boost agriculture and boost income generation for farmers. The idea was to make an oasis in the mountain desert," added Ray. One of the prime movers behind the project is the Rotary Club of London. A piece of land has been identified for the installation of solar pumps from the Indus River for growing fruits in the deserted area as income generation for the local communities. A team will be visiting Ladakh in May. One of the biggest achievements in Kashmir of the new Global Rotary Partnership was the setting up last October of health camps in Srinagar and Ladakh for surgeries and eye checkups. Over 1,000 eye patients were screened as part of a project funded by the Rotary Clubs of London and Calcutta, supported by the NGO Nanritam Purulia Lokeswarananda Eye Hospital. Another eye camp is due to take place in May. Rotarian doctors from across India conducted more than 500 surgeries during a 10-day mega surgical camp, including general surgery, laparoscopic surgery, joint replacement, laser surgery for piles and varicose veins, along with cataract surgery. Separately, the Rotarians organized the training of 100 schoolteachers from primary schools. David Johnson, a past president of the Rotary Club of London, said, "This is a fantastic beginning, and we wish to support the schools with books and materials in Ladakh supporting education and literacy." sentiments echoed by Tony Sharma, a past district governor of Rotary in London. This is fabulous work. Recognition from local communities and government bodies is essential to ensure ongoing sustainability and improve the living conditions of the communities. Further surgical camps took place in February in Rajouri and the Poonch areas of Jammu and Kashmir, where there have been recent instances of volatility. Alongside this effort, new Rotary clubs are being established in Jammu and Kashmir. These mega medical mission camps are helping us to motivate and impress upon people of Kashmir to bring an improved quality of life in this region. This is an example of building positive peace in Jammu and Kashmir, added Calcutta Rotarian Sorman Ray. This May, a second needs assessment will take place in Kashmir to assess progress, and in September, the Rotary Club of Calcutta will be hosting an international positive peace workshop to coincide with its 105th birthday, the oldest Rotary Club in mainland Asia. Rotary, with its international profile and proven track record with humanitarian projects, is becoming a trusted force for good in Kashmir. Sorman Ray added, "Our observations from many Rotary peace projects, customized to the local environment in Jammu and Kashmir, make us believe that peace comes when people are happy in their country and homes, in a safe environment, maintaining a healthy lifestyle, and with the freedom and resources to educate their children. However, ground realities may not allow that to happen easily, as we see it in many countries in the world today. The committee concludes that basic support of good healthcare, education, and income generation are some of the critical success factors that could bring us close to positive peace. This is Rotary with its expertise and proven experience of getting things done." Making an Impact. Story by Dave King. Rotary is all about first impressions and making an impact. But what about the concept of an impact club? Over the past year, a new Rotary Impact Club has been established in Leicester, which is running well and growing steadily. It's also very different. There is no formality, no protocol, no meal, no set format, no club president, simply a group of like-minded people who relate to Rotary's philosophy of service above self, who want to make a difference in their community. The model of an impact club was set up by Patrick Longano in the United States. The UK model is different from the ones operating in the US, where instead of having a separate club, the impact club is an extension of the legacy club, the Rotary Club of Leicester. According to Rotarian Diane Esho, it's a win-win for existing and new members, offering flexibility and future club growth. Diana, who is CEO of Easy Internet Services Limited, an online marketing company she set up in 2000, admitted she had found it increasingly difficult to commit to the regular Monday meetings. There had been lots of talk about growing the club and its sustainability, but nothing dramatic had changed. "From the outset, I didn't want to set up a satellite club, but I wanted to maintain strong links with the legacy club. I decided to gather a group of Rotarians and friends together who started to meet in an evening at various venues. Over 5 months, Diana realised the new model was working and began to have conversations with David Morris, membership team lead for Rotary in the East Midlands, District 1070, and past District Governor Steve Howe about its success and why this new style of meeting was working. Not only were the new meetings proving popular, but they were attracting more business owners from the local community. Following talks with past President Nick Thompson and Assistant Governor Richard Power, who'd also supported Diana, it was time to take the model to the next level. But what would they call the new club? It wasn't technically a separate club, but an extension of the existing club. During his trip to the Rotary International Convention in Houston in Texas in 2022, Steve Howe heard Patrick Longano talk about impact groups after founding one in the US. While he listened to Patrick speak, Steve realized that this was the style of club which Diana had set up and wished to grow. It was then that the Rotary Club of Leicester Impact Group was given its name. Initially, the Impact Group meetings were held in various free venues until it found its home at the Leicester University Business School, based on their campus in central Leicester. During this time, the club redesigned its website and social media to reflect what a non-Rotarian would want to see. Interestingly, almost all of the members of the Impact Club initially found details of the new group on social media, such as LinkedIn and Facebook, and also through the East Midlands Chamber of Commerce magazine. Diana added, "Unlike the Legacy Club, the meetings are wholly informal, with only a gentle structure to work within, which suits this new generation of Rotarians." The Impact Group, which has 13 members and was chartered in June 2023, meets in the early evening on the first and third Wednesday, with most members coming directly from work. Coffee is served and members enjoy fellowship in conversation. It proves that members need flexibility with times and the style of meetings. Sometimes a speaker is invited, generally from a charity the club wishes to support. The theme of most meetings is service and often explores ways in which the club can collaboratively help the local community. Diana explained, Members are encouraged to network and to learn about Rotary at each meeting by having a fun quiz and open collaborative discussions. When guests visit, each member is asked to introduce themselves and state what they do. This helps with awkward introductions and makes guests feel welcome. Members also bring their children, who in their own right have raised money for the club's various fundraising events. Hopefully they'll become Rotarians in the future. It's all about impact. Diana explained that the group prefers to support several local and international charities rather than focus on one major charity for the whole Rotary year. These causes reflect community needs around the club's meeting place. She said, "The loose, unstructured format of the club meetings and its after-work timing is appealing to new candidates who enjoy this informality and lack of a rigid structure. Is this approach the future of Rotary? Who knows? But it's working, and it seems to be attracting younger professionals, students and business people." The Big Issue. In each edition of Rotary magazine, expert contributors will be turning the spotlight on some of society's biggest challenges in The Big Issue. 2024 is going to be an electric year. Story by Norman Hunter, retired motor and travel journalist. Over 500,000 new pure electric cars will be sold across the UK this year, according to the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, bringing the total to around 1.5 million on our roads. In 2023, record sales of new pure electric cars, EVs, saw almost 315,000 registered, meaning there are now 51% more EVs on the road than at the end of 2022. And the major car manufacturers across the globe have responded to the increasing demand for EVs by ratcheting up production of a wide range of EV-specific models for this rapidly expanding market. Billions of pounds are being invested in new factories, including the building of battery plants here in the UK. All this is not at all surprising, as the benefits, both financially for the EV owner, the country's economy, and of course the environment, are unquestionable. In parallel, the number of high-powered EV chargers grew by 52% in 2023, to a total of almost 10,500 devices across more than 5,000 locations at the end of December. It is predicted that in 2024 this will climb substantially across all regions of the UK. So what else can we expect to see over the next 12 months? According to ZapMap co-founder Melanie Shufflebottom, more promotions and price drops from car manufacturers will come as the year progresses. She said, "Given the lack of incentives for consumers to switch to EVs, as opposed to businesses, we may also see the government introduce some new demand-side measures. What's more, we can also expect to see continued growth in second-hand sales, as many of the 200,000 new pure electric cars sold in 2020 move through into the used car market. This year we'll see more focus on the drivers that have been underserved so far in the transition to electric. That includes those with accessibility needs who have no off-street parking or purchasing cars second-hand." She added, "Now, well into 2024, we remain committed to our mission of making charging simple, giving drivers the products and services for stress-free charging, whatever their needs. We will see an increasing number of models available, many of which will boast much greater range and/or a lower price point. There will be far more chargers for drivers, with higher power and better reliability. With electric car ownership growing and the market expanding, 2024 is going to be an electric year." EV charging of the future? What's coming is simply mind-blowing. The Scandinavians, particularly the Norwegians and Swedes, are light years ahead in charging technologies. Already, they've tested and proved two innovations which are likely to change the future of EV charging. From underground charging cables able to send electricity wirelessly to cars as they travel along motorways and main commuter routes, to simple and rapid battery replacement instead of waiting to charge, will, it is expected, be heading our way in the not-too-distant future. Research teams from a number of different companies worldwide have successfully developed technologies that within the next decade will allow all manner of EVs, including cars, trucks and buses, to charge on the move in a process called dynamic charging. Scandinavian taxis are already using this technology in some cities. Charging is via under-road pads that can transmit electricity to receivers mounted underneath vehicles, thus minimizing time normally taken at charging stations. What a way to eliminate range anxiety. Another innovation is an automatic drive-in battery replacement system, again developed in Norway. The EV driver simply books a slot in advance, turns up, and the EV is driven robotically into a unit that removes the depleted battery from underneath the vehicle and replaces it with a fully charged pack, in the same time it would take to fill a tank with fuel. It is clear that range anxiety is well and truly a thing of the past for electric vehicle drivers, now that the EV driver's mindset is catching up with the technology. Planning the journey is essential, knowing where the charge points are en route. However, the growth rate of the electric vehicle charging infrastructure continues accelerating to meet the needs of EV drivers, with 2023 showing record installations. January 2024 has got off to an exhilarating start, following a record growth in the number of ultra-rapid chargers and high-power hubs available to EV drivers right across the UK, and this trend, according to Zapmap, looks set to continue throughout the year. From supermarkets to motorway service stations, private businesses and local authority councils to the hotel and leisure sectors, and a growing list of bus and commercial vehicle operators, EV charging is now a fast-growing area of the country's public network. Got the power? A tip for business EV drivers, rather than a wallet full of different charge cards, there is now a single card that can be used across thousands of charge points throughout the UK. Scotsman Niall Riddell started his company Power in 2022. North of the border, for example, Power cards, that's PAUA cards, allow access on all the charge points operated by Charge Place Scotland. Riddell says, throughout the UK, we are at 43,000 connectors and 14,000 locations with over 30 network partners. That's over 50% of all connectors and a mega 73% of all rapid or high-powered chargers in the UK. Norman Hunter is a retired motor and travel journalist, as well as a member of Hunterston Rotary Club in Ayrshire, Scotland. Norman has worked extensively in the European motoring industry for many years and most recently assisted the Electric Vehicle Association Scotland with its media, press and corporate communications. Share your thoughts. Tell us what you think about the future of electric cars by emailing editor@rotarygbi.org. Government praises End Polio Now campaign. Story by Doug Wills, Rotary Club of London. Rotary took a bow on the world stage last month. Rotary International President Gordon McInally joined a special event at the House of Commons to hear about the successful fight to rid the world of polio. Government Minister Andrew Mitchell and President McInally, together with embassy commissioners from Commonwealth countries and Rotarians from the UK and around the world, were told of the remarkable progress of Rotary's End Polio Now campaign. It was a poignant end to a Commonwealth week that included a service of thanksgiving at Westminster Abbey. Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Minister Mitchell told the packed event, "I adore Rotary. You're a most fantastic organisation and I've seen your work around the world. Thank you for your unwavering support over many, many years. Despite working in some of the most challenging environments, we've reduced wild poliovirus cases by more than 99%. This is an enormous success. This initiative has saved over 1.5 million lives and enabled 16 million people to walk. The absence of this initiative would have left them paralysed. I want to thank you for your collaboration, commitment and contributions. Rotary is an important partner for the government and the remarkable progress on polio eradication is a prime example of its impact." McInally had earlier told representatives from as far afield as Pakistan to Putney, "Since the inception of our efforts, we have reached an astonishing 3 billion children with the polio vaccine, ensuring that even the most vulnerable, those living in conflict zones, remote areas and whose families on the move, receive the protection they deserve. Perhaps most significantly, we have averted a staggering 20 million cases of paralysis. To put all this into perspective, imagine that nearly one in every three individuals in the UK has been spared from the devastation of polio. Let's recognise the science that says we can get this job done. Let's keep up the momentum and keep up the personal commitment as we approach the finishing line." Judith Dement, Vice Chair of the International Polio Plus Committee, said, "The Commonwealth has been a key ally in the global polio eradication effort. Support from Commonwealth member states accounts for roughly one quarter of all the global investment in polio eradication." She thanked Minister Mitchell for his personal support to integrate a gender perspective into programming and increase women's meaningful participation and decision-making. "This is important work which we should all champion." Dement added, "As we have heard tonight, a polio-free world is within our grasp, but will require our continued deliberate support. Let's continue to strive towards zero, and together we will end polio once and for all." Find out more. To find out more about End Polio Now, visit rotarygbi.org/polio. The Big Interview. Story by Jill Webster, Rotary Club of Norwich St Edmund. Driving into a war zone is a dangerous job, but one Norfolk Rotarian has been making regular trips to deliver humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Name: Scott Stones. Rotary Club: Swaffham, Norfolk. Occupation: owner of Weights and Stones Haulage. The Rotary motto is service above self, and nobody exemplifies this more than Scott Stones, a new Rotarian from Swaffham in Norfolk. Scott, a 47-year-old man with a young family and a successful business, regularly takes the hazardous journey to the Donbas region of Ukraine, taking humanitarian aid to the front line. Why does he do it, and how does his partner cope, knowing he is journeying through treacherous terrain could be shot and killed at any time in order to deliver much-needed supplies to people he doesn't know. For Scott and partner Zoe Waits, it is the realisation of something they have wanted to do for a long time. Waits and Stones is a haulage company carrying goods all over the UK, which also offers a storage facility for businesses and private individuals, as well as a safe place for storing caravans. A safe business in a safe part of Norfolk. We always wanted to help people, but didn't know where to start. We have a successful business, a happy family home, and a roof over our heads. We are lucky. Many people don't have that, said Zoe. We do it because we can, said Scott. When the war in Ukraine started on February the 22nd, 2022, we watched in horror. Then we heard that a local man, Ian Odgers, was looking for a trailer for the public to drop off donations, which could then be taken to the Ukrainian embassy in London, said Scott. The couple volunteered, and it snowballed from there. They were contacted by Dorota Darnell, who had co-founded the Polonia Group in Norwich and who requested that all items be taken to Poland. The first trip taken by Scott was on March 1, 2022. The images on television of desperate mothers and babies meant that the first container was filled with clothing, blankets, and hundreds of packets of nappies and sanitary wear. Following that trip, I was asked if I was prepared to go to Lviv in Ukraine, about 70 kilometres from the Polish border. There, I saw women with small children crossing the border and the men having to go back. I saw the horror of what was happening. I saw the frightened faces. I decided that if I was going to continue, I would do it on my terms. I've always been a bit like that, said Scott. It rolled from there. I started going to Kyiv, taking medical aid, electrical items, as well as the other stuff. Good food and medicines are in very short supply unless you have money, and the ordinary people and soldiers don't have money. I've been 10 times now, and over that period, I've seen small towns and villages decimated and turned to rubble. People are killed, and those who have survived are living underground as best they can. Children are living with grandparents as fathers have gone to fight, many of whom are probably now dead, while mothers are either helping with the war effort or have also been killed. I saw one young woman walking across a field with two very small children, one probably no more than two and the other about four, unwashed and thin, and her face was blank. She walked as drones fell around her, and none of them took any notice. They were the living dead. I sometimes think those who were killed were better off. Scott has taken six loads to Kyiv, but now goes directly to the front line at Odessa, Kherson, and other places in the Donbass region. He unloads his container and transfers items to small vans, and then delivers where items are needed. One container had several generators. Many went to field hospitals. These are regarded as essential, as electricity supplies are sporadic. Since last December, I've been working directly with the Moto Health Group in Odessa. Before the war, it operated rather like the St. John Ambulance. It trains medics for civilian and frontline work. Both men and women are trained. The men go to the front line, the women help those who are injured. I don't know who has the worst job. He also works directly with Defence of Odessa 210, which helps with military supplies and assisting refugees to reach safe areas as and when necessary. All are working in very difficult conditions and all with very little resources. There is a desperate need for medical and military equipment. Everyday items like clothing, bulletproof vests, boots and the like, along with medicines like paracetamol and morphine, bandages and plasters. Things that are thrown away or incinerated in this country are regarded as vital over there. The UK government is helping the Ukrainian government, but why can't the NHS, police force and the army supply stuff which they no longer need, rather than incinerating it? It could save thousands of lives. I was asked at one stage to take the morning after pills, as many as I could. I queried this. Apparently the Russian soldiers' biggest weapon of choice is rape, and continual rape. Some of the women going to the hospitals are so damaged and mutilated they need surgery. I couldn't comprehend this. How can anybody do such a thing, and often in the presence of children? Reflecting on what he has witnessed in Ukraine, Scott admits that witnessing the sheer destruction and loss of life has left lasting images on his mind. In April, the bridge I was about to cross was blown up, and we had to hunker down while the local men made Molotov cocktails and threw them at the Russians. Another time we were attacked by drones, which thankfully just missed us. Then there was the time we passed Bucha, the small village that was bombed. The smell was awful, the smell of death and destruction. You can see the pictures on television, but you can't smell pictures. Another time I was handed a gun as we were going through a village and was told to watch out for myself. That was scary, although I don't scare easily. Asked about the heartwarming sights he has witnessed during his visits to Ukraine, the Swaffham Rotarian admits it is the gratitude they receive for the work which they are doing. He added, "The smiles of the children when you give them sweets makes it worthwhile. Filthy hands, faces, bodies and clothes with just clean streaks where they've been crying. And they are so happy when they see us. When you go to a seemingly destroyed village, you see people crawl out from underground to meet us. A good part of an awful life. Then there are the soldiers I now know. Most of the original military are now dead, and the current ones come from all sorts of backgrounds and many parts of the world. One, Roma, was a bricklayer. During the day, it is fairly peaceful, and while the men have to occupy themselves waiting for nightfall, Roma paints. With sparse materials, he paints pictures on the front line. They are amazing pictures. Then the paints go away and he holds other weapons. Doesn't Zoe worry each time that Scott goes off that it might be the last time she sees him? She could be left by herself with three small boys, Zach 16, Zane 14, and Xander 9. He keeps coming back. The first two trips happened before I thought about it too much. I'm a bit of a dreamer and think everything will be all right. So far it has been. I'm very realistic about things, though. Our eldest boy, Zach, wants to go with his dad, but until he's 18 he stays here with me, she says. Scott and Zoe are passionate about what they are doing and want to do more. Initially, they self-funded the journeys, but now more people are getting to know about it. They are fundraising or donating money, although there is always a shortfall. Scott is currently looking to buy an ex-army truck to take to Ukraine, which he will leave there to distribute aid. The cost is likely to be in the region of £20,000, but the vehicle would enable local people to distribute aid where it is most needed. Scott would welcome direct contact from any Rotary clubs interested in supporting this venture. Many Rotary clubs in Norfolk have raised money to help them and have also supplied items for Scott to take with him. The Rotary Club of Norwich St Edmund, one of the many clubs which have helped fund his trips and also given items, gave Scott a Paul Harris Award for his humanitarian work. Zoe's job is collecting everything and doing all the paperwork. Scott freely admits he has no aptitude for the computer. "I'm just a lorry driver," he admits, "but paperwork is essential." There must be a paper trail, otherwise Scott wouldn't get into Ukraine and cross the country as he does regularly. Zoe's work is as essential as Scott's, but in a different way. They're an amazing couple, although they would probably disagree. We have to do what we can while we can. We're very lucky. These people have nothing. Find out more. If you would like to get in touch with Scott or Zoe, please contact Waits and Stones Haulage, 07824 505 670. Bipolar UK, getting answers. Bipolar UK, a national partner to Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland, is highlighting the devastating consequences of delays to bipolar diagnosis and how we can make a significant difference. Story by Peter McLaughlin, Rotary Bipolar E-Club. Bipolar is the fourth largest mental health condition globally. It is more than twice as common in the UK as epilepsy and autism. Despite this, there is no specialist care pathway for bipolar, and more than 60% of people with bipolar receive no specialist treatment. It takes an average of 9.5 years to get a diagnosis. Without timely diagnosis and management, bipolar can be a devastating condition where people take impulsive risks, massively overspend, and experience paranoid delusions, which can result in the loss of jobs, homes, and lives. Someone living with bipolar is also 20 times more likely to take their own life, so diagnosis, treatment, and support can be critical. The delay to diagnosis is caused by lack of awareness of symptoms amongst the public, lack of expertise amongst clinicians, and lack of support throughout the diagnosis journey. Bipolar UK's recent report addresses the situation and recommends cost-neutral changes that could dramatically improve the lives of those affected by bipolar. One of the ways Rotary has supported Bipolar UK is by helping to promote their Could It Be Bipolar campaign. Launched in 2022, it highlights symptoms and directs people to resources on Bipolar UK's website, including a mood disorder questionnaire and a mood tracker app. The initial six-month campaign reached over 8 million people through social media and press, with over 18,000 people taking the mood disorder questionnaire who could now be on a journey to a life-changing, even life-saving diagnosis. Bipolar UK's campaign evaluation demonstrated clear successes, but also highlighted the need to focus on healthcare engagement because a lack of knowledge amongst GPs was cited as one of the barriers to diagnosis. In response, Bipolar UK has created a clinical advisory panel to help increase engagement. They're also trialling a six-month campaign in GP surgeries in Northeast England, with posters highlighting symptoms in waiting rooms and letters posted to GP practice managers. Bipolar UK is now looking at ways to expand the campaign to reach more young people. Students are a particular target, as this is the age range when people often first experience symptoms. Receiving a timely diagnosis can be life-altering. The Rotary Bipolar E-Club is working with Bipolar UK to develop a global bipolar awareness project that will enable Rotary clubs to play a crucial role within their local communities. Beginning in England and Wales, the club aims to develop a scalable model that can be implemented across the world. Through sharing information, resources, and access to peer support services, Rotary could help transform the lives of millions. Find out more. For more details about how you can get involved, email Peter McLaughlin, Public Image Officer, Rotary Bipolar E-Club, rotary@bipolaruk.org. bipolaruk.org. Living in the Plastic Age, story by Brian Johnson, Rotary Club of Marlow Bridge. In the summer of 2021, with COVID still very much on our minds, the environmental group of District 1090, covering the Thames Valley, decided on a project to bring the districts together. And so the Thames Valley Cleanup was born. The project was tied to the goals of the Rotary Initiative End Plastic Soup, which District 1090 had forged close links with through the Dutch founder Geert Jan van Dommelen. To reduce the amount of plastic and other debris that gets carried into our seas and oceans, to raise awareness of the issues of microplastic waste finding its way into the water table, rivers and oceans and our food chain, to work with the local community and partner with other interested environmental groups, including schools, many of whom have active environmental programs, to respect the river users and the wildlife, to raise awareness of Rotary as a responsible environmental activist working with and for the community, to recruit new members, volunteers and friends. With this in mind, we needed to know whether a river cleanup was practical. In October 2021, with the help of Thames River Rescue, Henley Sea Cadets, Henley Mermaids and a few friends, a successful pilot was held, which received good media coverage and Henley Rotary Club acquired some new members. We worked with the local authorities, the Environment Agency and landowners. The local council was very helpful, offering help and advice on disposing of the collected debris. It was decided to launch the river cleanup in May 2022 when there would be minimum disruption to wildlife, the boating season on the River Thames had yet to start in earnest, and river levels were at a safe rate. A great deal of preparatory work was put in with water-based risk assessments, along with providing help and advice for Rotary clubs looking to take part, supplying river maps and other useful information to promote the event. We were ready to launch with flyers, newsletters, Zoom meetings and personal contacts. District 1090 was incredibly supportive. Throughout the run-up, we were talking to the Environment Agency and received lots of support from lock keepers along the River Thames. The 2022 river cleanup was spread out over 10 days, including two weekends. By mutual agreement, some clubs collected outside the timeframe, with other clubs organising school groups or working with local community groups. The first cleanup was a great success, with clubs asking when next. The Environment Agency suggested that Rotary should contact Thames 21, an organisation which mobilises thousands of volunteers each year to clean and green London's 400-mile network of waterways. They were holding their second plastic blitz in September 2022. In principle, their concept was the same, to collect litter and to raise awareness by encouraging local groups to take part. There were several differences, though. The plastic blitz was focused on the River Thames from Windsor to the estuary, with groups encouraged to register for this European Union-funded project preventing plastic pollution. Rotary 1090 agreed to join with Thames 21, and a separate entry process was set up for Rotary clubs who had the option of the full scientific study or just a basic bag count. The plastic blitz was now extended from Hungerford in Berkshire to the Thames estuary, with each group showing the proposed collection area on Google Maps. Each participating group was identified with a short descriptive paragraph on the Thames 21 website, which was available to Rotarians, environment groups and the public. The registration system worked well, and we were delighted to find a club from South London and one from Essex had joined the Plastic Blitz via our entry registration. In 2023, we formalised the partnership with the Environment Agency, Thames 21 and Rotary in the Thames Valley. By mutual agreement, the event was moved to May, which would run over three weekends, one of which coincided with National Rivers Week. The Plastic Blitz was expanded to include Rotary districts in London and East Anglia. One of the spin-offs was that the students from the media department of Reading College asked if they could make a film about the Plastic Blitz, which is now available on the website. The Plastic Blitz has proved a huge success. Thames 21 reports that nitrous oxide cylinders were discovered by Marlow collectors. The strangest item collected was a plastic crocodile head. We are now looking forward to this year's Plastic Blitz, which takes place from May the 25th to June the 9th. If your district has not adopted the Plastic Blitz, then your club can join via our website, where you will find everything you need to know and be able to register. Find out more. For more information about Plastic Blitz and how to register, visit rotaryplasticblitz.uk. plasticblitz@gmail.com. Story by Nitesh Joshi, Chair-elect, Rotary GB&I Regional Board. Building a future in North Star. Rotary GB&I Chair-elect Nitesh Joshi outlines how the North Star project is going to have a big impact on Rotary in these Isles. Our great organisation has to adapt now to keep up with the vast changes happening in wider society. While becoming recognised as a regional pilot by Rotary International has been a boost, our new regional governance arrangements were a homegrown initiative. Our strategic regional board can consider and implement long-term plans, much as you'll find in big business. We finally have a 5-year strategic plan, and through continuity, the board intends to see that through. After all, it's not a coincidence that North Star is a 5-year vision. Projects are considered through small working groups that include specific skills available in the wider membership. Membership growth and experience sees a positive experience starting with that initial inquiry and continuing by fulfilling their desire to give something back to society through Rotary. The communications workstream is streamlining many aspects of online information, administration and messaging for members and the general public. Learning and development is reviewing the whole facilitated learning programme. Also, by locally supplementing the materials on the RI Learning Centre, we have the opportunity to get accreditation and be recognised for the skills we can offer potential future leaders in business as much as within Rotary. Organisational effectiveness encompasses cluster development, financial stability through different approaches as much as cost efficiency, and the complex legal plan for incorporated status. Specialist advisors have a greater GB&I regional focus and work collaboratively with the support centre. Becoming one of two regional pilot areas also brought the potential for RI investment, supporting their regional adaptability pilots. Getting RI funding was a successful yet bumpy ride, much as with any business investment. Detailed tasks are linked to the action plan and our workstream outputs, with key performance indicators to monitor progress. North Star grew from needing a sound funding case, yet it is more a vision to truly grow our membership to 60,000 by 2028, through an expansion of business as usual, including new routes to membership, and projects to modernise the organisation and make it more appealing to modern society. We are now into the operational phase of implementing the North Star whole and sharing the vision with district teams and your clubs. This is complementary to, not instead of, the ongoing work of the specialist advisor teams, support centre and very much the districts. It is now for each of you to help translate the ambitious vision into a successful reality. Our new membership channels. Before explaining the new membership channels we have, let's consider Rotary GB&I to be an engine with one piston firing. Consider this is our traditional club membership piston, which until now has been our only effective channel for attracting new members into Rotary. This piston has been firing since Rotary started, and over the years has become tired and less effective. A few years ago, direct membership was announced, which is our ubiquitous 24/7 membership channel where members join online and after payment and induction, join our direct members community. Here they communicate virtually and participate in active service projects. Direct membership is the second piston for our engine, and with over 400 current members, it is taking some of the load off piston one. Corporate membership is our new third membership channel, where clubs invite local businesses in their area to become members. Local estate agents, health clubs, schools, and even your club venue can become potential members joining your club. Corporate members bring diversity, business experience, and varying backgrounds into Rotary to help sprout new ideas and reignite projects. Our third piston is helping to carry our membership load along with the other two, each piston directly contributing to membership. All of the above routes to membership permit one new member to join at a time. Enterprise membership is our new exciting fourth route into Rotary GB&I and allows us to attract large businesses with more than 100 employees to join at once. Enterprise clients benefit from working with Rotary using our branding, setting up customised volunteer and impact days, and measuring their employees' volunteer hours. Enterprise clients are also able to fulfil their environmental and sustainability responsibilities, as well as benefiting from advanced leadership and development training provided to their employees by Rotary and the Online Learning Centre. The newly formed enterprise team at our support centre will support and find enterprise clients. With four pistons firing and enterprise able to recruit 100 to 1,000 members at once, our North Star goal becomes more achievable. Rotary feature. Be prepared for fun and friendship. Story by Adrian Fayers. Rotary and the Scouts have bonds going back to Rotary's founder, Paul Harris, 90 years ago. Today, the International Fellowship of Scouting Rotarians perpetuates that link. Rotary and scouting and guiding share many values, such as integrity, respect for others, taking care of the world we live in, empowering girls, and wanting to make a difference. And Rotarians have supported scouting and guiding since their inception. Rotary founder Paul Harris was a recipient of Scouting's prestigious Silver Buffalo Award in 1934. Many current Rotarians are or have been involved with these organisations, perhaps as members or leaders themselves, or maybe supporting their family members. Through their Rotary Clubs, they might now be helping local groups with funding or using their expertise. The International Fellowship of Scouting Rotarians has over 1,000 members from 45 countries. As with any Rotary Fellowship, there are three strands of opportunities: using your passions and skills in service projects, meeting people who share your interests, and finding new experiences. Membership is open not just to Rotarians and Rotaractors, but also their families. One of the objectives of the IFSR is to provide opportunities to meet with others who share a passion for scouting and guiding. One of the ways we get together is at annual general meetings. These are always held in an interesting place, such as at Gilwell Park in East London during the annual reunion, or on a boat cruising the canals of Birmingham. During one weekend away in Poole, the AGM was held on Brownsea Island. Husband and wife team Shirley and Adrian Fayers were scout leaders in Middlesex for many years, but sadly, they were never part of a World Jamboree contingent during that time. But in 2007, the World Scout Jamboree came to Chelmsford, Essex, celebrating 100 years of scouting, and with other members of IFSR UK, they were privileged to meet scouting Rotarians and scouts from around the world at the IFSR booth. The fellowship promotes the growth and development of the scout and guide movement, giving active encouragement at local, national and international level. The IFSR Community Service Award can be given by a Rotary Club to a scout or guide unit of their choice that they wish to recognise for performing community service. The award may be given annually to any scout or guide unit by any Rotary Club. Recipients are selected by the Rotary Club. The fellowship also recognises Rotary Clubs that render service in support of scout and or guide activities and individuals who have provided exceptionally unique service to scouting and Rotary. For example, Downham Market Rotary Club in Norfolk was recognised for the part they played in upgrading the local scout and guide hut, not just by donating money, but also by using the members' expertise in the design and planning of a new kitchen and toilet facilities. Ken Scott, who hails from St Albans, remembers that a few years ago, District 1260, which is Rotary in Bedfordshire, Buckinghamshire and Hertfordshire, arranged for some Bulgarian scouts to join an inbound Rotary youth exchange camp, with local scout families providing the home hosting element. William Harmsworth, the fellowship's current chairman, points out that both Rotary and Scouting and Guiding are acutely aware of the need to protect our environment and to support humanitarian aid worldwide. IFSR UK is helping Rotary clubs and scout and guide groups to become involved in projects of this nature. If you'd like more information about joining IFSR or about IFSR awards, contact info@ifsrinribi.org. The fellowship would love to hear from Rotarians about any connections they or their clubs may have with local scout groups and guide companies. And limited funds are currently available as a top-up for small local projects where clubs are working with scouts or guides and need a little financial help. In My Dreams I Dance. For polio ambassador Anne Wafula-Strike, her story is one of hope after being stricken by polio aged 2 to one day representing Kenya at the Paralympics. Story by Dave King. What's it like to live with polio? According to Paralympic athlete and Rotary polio ambassador Anne Wafula-Strike, her body is like a jellyfish. Polio has affected me in a funny way, affecting my nervous system, which has prevented some of my muscles from growing, she explained. Some people will have a weak hand or a weak leg, but the way polio affected my body was in an S shape all the way from the top to the bottom, so some of my limbs are bigger than others. I've got no muscle growth on the left side of my trunk, and what is presented on the right-hand side of my body is muscle, but it does not get any signal. Sometimes I look at myself and say, I've got a body like a jellyfish. Anne's polio journey from Kenya to Britain has been well documented in the book In My Dreams I Dance, an evocative autobiography with tales of prejudice, friendship and motherhood leading to triumph over testing circumstances. It is a tale of adversity, endurance and accomplishment. From being a healthy child one day living in Mihu, a village in western Kenya, the next this two-year-old child was regarded as an outcast by the elders, struck down by a mysterious illness which no one knew the cause or treatment of. I was coming down from the river with my mother, carrying small pots and mimicking what she was doing, and then as we approached the homestead, I fell down, recalled Anne. I developed a high temperature, and my grandmother thought I'd been bitten by a snake. By the following day, I'd lost consciousness and my whole body was limp. They called in a witch doctor, but nothing happened. They called in the Christians, who forced holy water down my throat. This went on for several months, and then my dad, who was in the army, was advised to give me up. They told him, "This is a woman. She's no good. She's a second-class citizen. Because she is disabled, she will not amount to what the African woman is supposed to do. She won't go to the river to fetch water and firewood and be the traditional wife." But my father told the community he would not give me up. He told them, "She is my daughter. She is my fourth. She is my blood. There's no way I would abandon my child." My family were adamant they wanted to find a cure for me, yet the village had tried to burn down my dad's house, and then he was advised by his parents and elder brothers to just go. So Anne's family headed for the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, where British doctors at the hospital advised them she has poliomyelitis and began the long path towards giving her mobility using calipers and crutches and with her legs in braces. Anne ended up at a school for the physically handicapped before going on to mainstream secondary school. As she tells her story, one she has recounted many times, she reflects on how hard it was growing up, being treated differently, and how hard her family had to fight against prejudice and hostility from others. With a lack of knowledge, people thought my disability was contagious. I had to fight for everything. Anne went to university, where she qualified as a teacher, before falling in love and marrying a man from Newcastle. Anne and Norman moved to Essex and defied medical experts when she gave birth to a baby boy called Timothy. Following the birth, Anne was looking for ways of losing weight and stumbled upon wheelchair racing. She turned out to be pretty good and remarkably found herself competing at the 2004 Paralympic Games in Athens as a Kenyan athlete, becoming the first wheelchair racer from East Africa to compete at this prestigious event. Anne later switched allegiance to represent Great Britain at international meetings. England is where I first discovered wheelchair racing existed, so I do feel like I'm from Great Britain. I was very proud when I competed for Kenya in Athens, so I consider myself an Essex girl from Africa. In 2014, Anne was awarded an MBE for services to disability sport and charity, and in recent years has become a campaigner for disabled rights. 6 years ago, while on a train, she was unable to reach a toilet in time because of her wheelchair. She lost control of her bladder and urinated into her clothing. Afterwards, Anne criticised cross-country trains for failing to provide a working disabled accessible toilet. Anne has also worked closely as a Rotary ambassador, joining the campaign to eliminate polio. I live in Essex, and we had the discovery of that polio sample in North London in 2022, just 30 miles away, she added. This is frightening and goes to show how polio is just a few hours away from anyone. Rotarians are my heroes and heroines because they are still fighting this disease. Until every child in the world is vaccinated, until every child gets their booster, then we are not safe. And that's why we have to make sure that parents get their children vaccinated and that the parents understand the importance of the polio vaccine. Find out more. To read more about Anne, including Rotary Club speaker opportunities, visit annestrike.org. That's annestrike.org.
Clubs connect for the Cameroon Catalyst. What connects a town in Lancashire, the Isle of Man, and a village in Cameroon? The answer is the Cameroon Catalyst. Cameroon Catalyst is a student-driven international development charity empowering sustainable change in rural Cameroon. The charity was co-founded in 2009 by a team of civil engineering students at the University of Southampton in partnership with a native Cameroonian living in the UK. For the first 5 years, the charity's efforts were focused on the village of Bambouti in eastern Cameroon, where five projects were delivered over 5 years: a medical centre, a mechanical workshop, a solar electrification hub, and improved mud brick housing. The charity then looked to support villages across the wider eastern region, where access to clean drinking water, sanitation and hygiene was the most significant barrier to development. Cameroon Catalyst committed to a programme of water, sanitation and hygiene wash projects with which Rotary became involved. In 2016, Tom Edwards was one of the team from Southampton who travelled to Cameroon as part of a clean water well project. On his return, he sent a request to his grandfather, Mike Edwards, for £500 towards the cost of the visit and ensuing construction works. Mike was international lead for the Rotary Club of Radcliffe in Lancashire. The funding was agreed, and Tom delivered a presentation to Radcliffe Rotary about the charity. This so enthused the club that an initiative began to raise £5,000 during 2018 and 19 for another well. In the end, a total of £6,370 was raised, including £1,000 from a district 1285, which is Rotary in Northwest England and the Isle of Man Foundation grant. In 2022, it was agreed to raise £6,000 to build a ventilated latrine block, when as part of the fundraising, The club president walked coast to coast across Scotland over 2 weeks, when, with the support of clubs across the district, £2,400 was raised to complete the club's fundraising target. One of the clubs to respond to the appeal was the Rotary Club of Douglas in the Isle of Man. International lead for the Douglas Club, John Mudge, asked if they could give further financial support through funds which had been earmarked for an international project which they had been unable to identify. Cameroon Catalyst was a perfect fit, a properly managed charity with a track record through another Rotary Club, whose needs were small enough that a few thousand pounds would make a real difference. The two Rotary Clubs have agreed to work together on the next round of fundraising required by Cameroon Catalyst for a deep water well with solar-powered pumping and above-ground water storage and distribution. Hopefully, this will be the start of a long-term partnership. As Mike Edwards remarked, the power of Rotary is significant when clubs work together. Be part of the action. Eve Conway, Rotary International Director 2023-25, invites you to the Rotary Action Summit coming to Newcastle this November. One of the great joys of being a part of Rotary is being connected to 1.4 million other change makers in our local areas and around the world. Rotary Action Summits, formerly known as institutes, are one of the highlights of our calendars, giving us all a chance to come together, network, learn, and be inspired. This year's Action Summit heads to Newcastle from November the 8th to the 10th, and I'm extending the invitation to all Rotary members across Great Britain and Ireland to experience this for yourselves. We're excited to have Rotary leaders from across Great Britain and Ireland and the world joining us too. Alongside me, our first wave of speakers includes Mario César Martins de Camargo, who takes on the role of Rotary International President from the 1st of July 2025. Mario, a member of the Rotary Club of Santo André, São Paulo, Brazil, has put boosting Rotary's public image high on his priorities. As well as Mario, we'll also be joined by past RI President Holger Natt, trustee of the Rotary Foundation. So expect amazing examples of how the foundation is supporting clubs in changing lives and how it could also do the same for your club. From closer to home, Nitesh Joshi, chair of the Rotary GB&I board for 2024-25, will be bringing you updates on the first year of our North Star project, our five-year plan to boost membership to 60,000 by 2028. Not only is this an incredible opportunity to hear from and network with Rotary senior leaders, the Action Summit is also a platform for you to share with them the amazing work you're doing in your club and community. We want to put our clubs at the heart of this event. After all, no one does action quite like the 1.4 million people of action that make up our organisation. We want to hear from you. Has your club got a project you're proud of? Maybe you've done something unique to address a need in your community. Or perhaps you've harnessed the power of the Rotary Foundation to have an impact overseas. Then come and be part of our event programme in Newcastle. Your stories are the story of Rotary. They are the way we inspire and learn from each other, develop individually and collectively, grow our organisation. If you or your club have something amazing to share, I encourage you to contact Roger Stent, the Action Summit Chairman, on roger@strlearning.co.uk to find out more. What to expect from Newcastle? We have a fantastic venue in Newcastle's Stevenson Quarter in the heart of the city. The Crown Plaza will keep you comfortable and connected during the event. Famed for its friendly hospitality, Newcastle is one of our region's most welcoming and vibrant cities that will entertain you before, during, or after the Action Summit. From the Angel of the North to Earl Grey's Monument and every castle, cathedral, and coastline in between, the northeast of England is steeped in heritage which you will have the freedom to explore. There will be the opportunity to sign up for a range of local excursions ahead of the event to take in the local heritage, kindly hosted by the area's Rotary Clubs. I hope to see you there. Find out more. To find out more, view packages and book tickets, rotarygbi.org/Newcastle24.
Shelterbox appealing for Rotary support in Gaza. Shelterbox has launched an urgent fundraising appeal to provide emergency shelter and other essential items to people left with nowhere to live in Gaza and other disasters around the world. Since the conflict began last October, up to 1.9 million people have become displaced in Gaza. That's 85% of the population, with no choice but to shelter in community buildings like schools, makeshift shelters, or out in the open. There is severe overcrowding and disease is spreading. The charity will be providing emergency shelter aid and other essential items to thousands of people who need it in Gaza, working in partnership with Medical Aid for Palestinians. Emergency shelter aid items like tarpaulins, rope and tape will mean people can make temporary repairs to damaged buildings that will help keep them watertight and protect them from the winter weather. Chilling winter temperatures have been putting the lives of 1.9 million displaced people at risk. Blankets, mattresses, pillows and floor mats will help people stay warmer and save lives. Shelterbox say they will also provide washing sets, water carriers, kitchen sets, and items like nappies, toothbrushes, sanitary items, and body and hair wash. These are vital items for people with no belongings who are unable to return home or people who have had their homes damaged. The Rotary-supported charity, which was started by Rotarians in Cornwall in 2000, said, "Together with MAP, we will be procuring items in Egypt and Turkey. The situation is complex, but we intend that our aid will reach people in the coming weeks via the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and Gaza." MAP is predominantly a medical organisation that was already working in Gaza before the conflict started. Working together with them means we can get emergency shelter aid and other essential aid items into Gaza and to the people who need it more quickly. MAP is based in London with offices in Gaza, West Bank and Beirut. They're also partnering with others and have already delivered trucks of aid into Gaza with the International Red Cross. As a humanitarian organisation, Shelterbox must remain neutral and apolitical. We go wherever in the world the shelter need of civilians is the highest. Right now, that is in Gaza. With your Rotary Club and community support, we can provide emergency shelter and essential items to the people who have nowhere to live in Gaza. Find out more. For more details about the appeal, visit shelterbox.org/Gaza/appeal-RC.
Seeing is believing. The Rotary Experience. I get around crooned the Beach Boys. Well, a long time ago. I've been privileged enough to visit clubs and districts throughout our GBI, and indeed many continents. Visiting clubs should be a given in our Rotary, if only to know how perfect our own club actually is. The fun and mystery of strange rituals, dubious menus, odd conversations and questionable hygiene in uncharted territory. The glass crunches underneath your feet across the dimly lit half-flooded ploughed field of a car park. You wander in, hoping for a jovial group of like-minded Rotarians, and after negotiating steep stairs, you find yourself in an upper room. It's like a cage fighting ring. Greeting at the door is by old one-eyed Bill, obviously a Rotarian from his badge, a handshake, a grunt, and a missing tooth, I notice. His partner, possibly in crime, alongside keeps score of who's there and who's not on a battered paper, and dispenses patina-covered badges. The seating in front of me has questionable stains. Sellotaped remnants of tinsel are on the ceiling, and the meeting starts with everyone rising without any warning whatsoever to sing grace, which is led by a small, dapper man on a corner keyboard. A business meeting began after a meal of lukewarm gruel, with indiscriminate lumps and a sad, hardened bread roll. Any inquiry about dietary options brings furrowed frowns and furrowed monobrows. Entertainment was 3 hours of heated debate on amending the official club banner from moss green to a striking bog water brown, followed by two unidentified Rotarians outdoing each other, demanding support for their service project. The top table were wearing chains of office and appeared preoccupied talking to each other. As for demographics, variety was not the spice of life. What do people actually think when they visit art clubs? Impressions matter. First impressions more so. A smile and handshake on arrival. An introduction or two. A warm, inviting venue. How are the staff? Food? Service? Is there an energy? An attendee engagement? Is there laughter? Are there people enjoying themselves? Does the meeting have purpose and dynamism? Is there a vibe? Are people arguing about Rotary trivia? And diversity I leave for another time. To truly understand a club's spirit and become one with its culture takes numerous visitations. Observe the rituals, sample the cuisine. Maybe wear some ceremonial garb. Perhaps get a tattoo. Show your commitment. Come on. Talk with the members. Some of them will speak. And attend service events to complete the picture. The first impression isn't everything, but it certainly starts the story. We should all periodically self-reflect on the messages we send to guests, both intentionally and unintentionally. When we meet people, including at Rotary, it's important we find common ground without an interrogation. A shared laugh, a story, lifts everyone. But that first hello leaves an indelible mark. We need to make ours memorable for welcoming warmth, which always leaves a good impression. Expect the unexpected. Rotary is a Pandora's box of joy and experience. Every club has its own unique flavour, blending fellowship and service in special ways. And that diversity is what makes visiting rewarding. Sure, an occasional curmudgeon, bland meal or snooze-worthy meeting will happen, but far more often you'll discover passionate hearts joining hands to create lasting good. We are people of action. I say embrace the variety out there in Rotary with a sense of humour and adventurous spirit. Let 1,000 Rotary flowers bloom in our own weird and wonderful ways. And if things get too spicy, what is life without joy amongst friends, even if we don't always see eye to eye? My name's Jeff Mackey, a member of the Audley Rotary Club in District 12 Temp, Staffordshire, Shropshire, and part of the West Midlands. I'm currently the president in our 60th year. And I just think we shouldn't judge a book by its cover, or a Rotary club by its first impression.
So that's it for the spring issue of Rotary Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and do let me know what you think of the audio edition. I always enjoy receiving your correspondence, and you can email me at editor@rotarygbi.org. Rotary Magazine has been presented by editor Dave King and a team of professional narrators. All items in this audio edition are copyright and owned by Rotary International Great Britain and Ireland. A downloadable edition of this audio magazine for visually impaired members can be requested. The audio magazine is also available to download or stream by visiting the Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland website at rotarygbi.org/magazine. I hope you can join us for the summer issue, which will be available in July. The focus will be on the North Star Membership Initiative, which you may have heard about. We'll be taking an in-depth look at what North Star is all about, and in particular the four key pillars of growing Rotary: traditional clubs, direct membership, corporate and enterprise. I will be looking to unpack North Star so you can understand what part you can play in helping to grow Rotary. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to you joining us next time.